Right. I still had plenty of magic in me, but this active combat was exhausting. Ms. Terwilliger's words came back to me. She wants an easy fight. That's what Alicia was doing, trying to wear me down with magic so she could cast the spell that finished me. With the stolen life and magic she had, this battle wouldn't exhaust her as quickly. Alicia, we don't have to fight, I said. Please, let's stop this and get out of here before this place burns down. Tell me where Jill is, release Eddie, and we can be on our way.
Stop this? After you tried to kill me?
Not caring about making the flames worse, Alicia hurled another fireball at me. I was tempted to try the mirroring spell and send it back to her, but she was too close to Eddie for my comfort.
You're too much of a threat, Sydney,
she said as I neutralized the fireball with a water spell.
I can't allow you to leave. I'm gonna let this building burn down around you, just like you left me to burn in that house.
The floor rippled beneath me again, causing me to fall once more. She began speaking a complicated incantation, one I recognized as the start of the spell that had frozen Eddie in place. That was her plan. Make me into a living statue and leave me in this burning building, paralleling what I'd done to her. Desperately, I scrambled to my feet, needing to get out of the way of the spell. As she finished speaking, I saw something incredible. Malachi Wolf, standing in the doorway to the burning room. His eye patch was on his right eye, had changed from day to day, and there were pieces of rope around his wrists and ankles as though he'd been bound. I couldn't replicate the statue spell on my own, but I'd heard the mirroring spell enough to feel good about that. I spoke the words and felt the magic engage in me. Alicia's eyes widened in alarm as she attempted to move out of the way of the rebounding spell. What she hadn't seen, however, was the herd of chihuahuas running into the room with Wolf. He'd spoken a word to them and pointed at her, and they swarmed around her feet, causing her to stumble and preventing her from moving away quickly. The statue spell seized her, and suddenly she was as frozen as Eddie, except far less graceful looking. He was like some noble warrior ready to strike. She was mid-fall, staring in disbelief at the yipping pack of chihuahuas swarming her frozen feet.
"Would have been here sooner,"
growled Wolf, calling the pack off with a quick gesture.
"But that bitch tied me up. Had to wait for the dogs to gnaw through my ropes."
"Quickly," I said, running toward Eddie. "Help me get him out of here." I coughed from the thickening smoke and glanced at Alicia, her pretty face frozen in a snarl of dismay. "Help me get both of them out of here." Between Wolf and me, we managed to drag the frozen forms out before the building came down. We got them to Wolf's main house as the fire department showed up, followed almost immediately by Adrian, Trey, Ms. Terwilliger, and a few of the witches from the lake. Adrian pulled me into an embrace.
"Are you okay?"
he asked.
"When Jackie called me, I didn't know what to expect."
I rested my head against his chest, reassured by his touch. "Fine. I got lucky. Really lucky. But Eddie..." One of the witches from a coven I didn't know produced some dried flowers that she spread over Eddie as she chanted a Latin spell. Moments later, Eddie came to life again, still in mid-jump. He stumbled as he landed, looking around in surprise when he wasn't where he expected. Adrian and I astonished him further by sweeping him into a group hug.
"You'll have to unfreeze Alicia, too," I said in dismay. "We need to find Jill."
Ms. Terwilliger frowned.
"That's unfortunate. This is actually a very neat way to deal with her. You didn't get any indication where Jill was beforehand?"
I shook my head and released Eddie.
"No, she admitted Jill was alive for now, but didn't elaborate."
I thought back, trying to replay each word amid the chaos. Although it had been nice to hear Alicia confirm Jill was alive, we'd already gotten a sense of that through our spells. It wasn't as useful as I'd hoped.
"And she said something about Jill listening to psalms." it made as little sense to Mr. Williger as it had to me. And she gave a great sigh, exchanging glances with some of the other witches. They didn't look thrilled about releasing Alicia either.
Well, once the fire department's finished, we'll have to create a secure circle and release her to get some answers.
Trey, who'd been standing off on the sidelines, suddenly cleared his throat.
You might not have to. I think I know where she's at. Or, well, at least, who's holding her.
All eyes shifted to him in astonishment, but he didn't flinch under the scrutiny.
I think the Warriors of Light have her.
Chapter 13. Adrian. What does Salmon have to do with the Warriors? I asked. Sydney shot me a wry look. Psalms, not Salmon. And I don't know the connection. She regarded Trey expectantly. They're a kind of religious poem, right? From the Bible? He nodded. Yes. Well, that is, the ones the Warriors like to quote all the time aren't actually in the Bible. They've made up a bunch of their own. But they recite them a lot on formal occasions, before meetings, stuff like that. If Alicia said Jill was hearing them, she's probably being held by them somewhere. Believe me, they'd love nothing more than to hold a Maroi captive. Eddie turned toward Jackie incredulously and pointed at Alicia. Unfreeze her like you did me. We need answers, and we need them now, before it's too late for Jill. I'd never seen him so worked up, and was tempted to calm him with compulsion. Jackie remained remarkably unruffled. I'm certainly not going to release her here. If we do it, it'll be with a dozen other witches to secure her, and even if we do, don't expect her to be forthcoming. She's right, said Sydney slowly. Even if we free Alicia, we don't know that she'll tell us anything. I'll make her talk, insisted Eddie. Or Adrian could compel her. Sydney didn't look thrilled about that, but in my head, Aunt Tatiana was chomping at the bit. Yes, yes, we'll compel her into telling us things she doesn't even realize she knows. There are spells to protect against that, and Alicia's wily enough to have taken that precaution. Jackie glanced at one of her witch friends. What do you think? What time span would weaken her? The witch regarded frozen Alicia with a critical eye. I'd leave her like that for a week, honestly. But if you're in a rush... She eyed Eddie before turning back to Alicia. I'd say 48 hours.
48 hours? Exclaimed Eddie. Jill might not have 48 hours if the Warriors are holding her. They could be performing some execution ritual as we speak.
Jackie remained undaunted. Being in that frozen state strips you of energy. 2 days like that and she'll be physically and magically burned out. Much easier to question. Even then, I still wouldn't free her unless we're in an extremely secure location, with extra backup. She's too unpredictable.
2 days is too much, Eddie reiterated. I couldn't help but share his dismay. Sydney, however, looked thoughtful.
Alicia will be less of a threat and maybe easier to interrogate by then, she said slowly. And in the meantime, we might be able to get some faster answers about the Warriors.
How? Trey and I asked together.
From Marcus, Sydney said. Or rather, from one of his contacts. She's undercover in the Warriors. She might be able to uncover something before we could get it out of Alicia anyway. Let me check with her and Marcus. If they can't dig up anything in 24 hours, the witches will release Alicia for questioning.
No one seemed thrilled by that compromise, but they agreed to it. We all finally dispersed, with Eddie going to stay with Trey while Sydney and I returned to Clarence's house. Sydney called Marcus along the way to explain the situation, and he promised to get back to her as soon as he could. When we arrived at Clarence's, Rose and Dimitri were chomping at the bit to know what had happened. I let Sydney fill them in while I went to my mom and Declan. He'd only been in my life for a couple of days, but I was surprised by how much I ached to see him, even though he did little more than sleep. After the turbulent events of the day, and the panic I'd felt upon learning Sydney had faced Alicia alone, Declan's presence was soothing. Marcus called Sydney back a couple of hours later, saying he had news and would come to Palm Springs immediately to deliver it in person. Marcus was as much a wanted fugitive as Sydney, though, and in his usual cautious way, he arranged for a meeting away from both Clarence's and Trey's the next day. The place he chose was a Mongolian restaurant outside of town. Rose and Dimitri, after much coaxing, agreed to wait at Clarence's for an update so as not to create too large a crowd. We had Trey and Eddie join us, though, because Trey had useful insight about the warriors and because no force on Earth could keep Eddie from making plans about Jill. When we walked into the restaurant, Sidney exhaled in relief. Good. He brought Sabrina with him. I'd met Sabrina briefly, but didn't know her well. She was about my age and had been an undercover member of the Warriors of Light for years. Her first meeting with Sidney had involved holding Sidney at gunpoint, which didn't thrill me, though we knew now that Sabrina had been trying to protect Marcus. Over time, we'd come to respect her and the important job she did. She didn't agree with the Warriors' philosophy, yet she'd remained among them because the intel she provided was so useful to others. I certainly hoped it'd be useful today. Good news and bad news, said Marcus, which wasn't exactly the opening we'd been hoping for. The good news is that we're pretty sure the Warriors do have Jill. The bad news is that we don't know exactly where she is. Eddie crossed his arms. Time to free Alicia and get some answers. Not necessarily, said Sabrina. Her long blonde hair was pulled up into a high ponytail today, and she looked very much like an ordinary girl, not someone posing as a member of a fanatical anti-vampire group. My guess is that Alicia doesn't know where Jill is either. She most likely caught Jill and delivered her to the Warriors, then let them hide her away somewhere. I snooped around and found reports of a high-profile Moroi prisoner, but they aren't even revealing her location to members in our own group. They might work with someone like Alicia, but they wouldn't trust her much. The news wasn't cheering me up, and Eddie shared my frustration. Then what do we do if your own people don't know where she is? He demanded. Well, said Sabrina, someone knows, just not someone at my level. Marcus nodded as he swallowed a bite of his stir-fry, which by my estimation seemed to contain entirely meat and no vegetables. Primitive, sniffed Aunt Tatiana. Hey, lay off, I told her. Being a dashing fugitive probably requires lots of protein. We have some ideas to get to that someone, Marcus said. The first is to ask the alchemists to do it. We know they have ties to the Warriors. For all we know, they're working with them, said Eddie. They have in the past. On some things, Sidney said slowly. But not on this. They don't want to risk the Moroi going into chaos. They want Jill back. They wouldn't stand by if she was a prisoner. Agreed, said Marcus. His eyes met mine. That, and they might intervene simply because they won't like the Warriors overstepping their bounds. They're nothing if not control freaks, and they aren't going to like that the Warriors worked with a witch to interfere with the Moroi. Of course, that means someone has to tell them the Warriors have Jill. It doesn't have to be one of you, Eddie said, catching the unspoken message between Marcus and me. Heck, I'll do it. They might not believe you, I said, smiling at his vehemence. They might not even believe me. Trey had been quiet while discussing the group he'd once been a member of, but he finally spoke up now. There's also a good chance the Warriors will deny it, even if the alchemists do come asking about it. They're kind of obsessed with control, too. They might be difficult out of spite. You're right, said Sabrina, which is why we have one more option. There was a warning note in her voice that put me on alert. Which is? She exchanged glances with Marcus and then turned to Sidney. The Warriors are going to be initiating some new members next week. You could go undercover and then try to infiltrate the higher tiers of power to find out where Jill's at. She spoke in a rush, as though that might help reduce the overall absurdity of the suggestion. You want me to join the Warriors? Sidney exclaimed. No! Said Eddie and I in unison. You'd just be participating in their recruitment, said Sabrina, as though that were some kind of reassurance. It's like an orientation. Or a sorority rush, said Marcus, which really didn't improve things. Trey shook his head in dismay. I know what you're talking about, and it's crazy. He turned to the rest of us. They round up a bunch of potential recruits, bring them in secret to a warrior compound, and make them compete in all kinds of ordeals to prove their worth. Remember when I had to fight my own cousin? The Warriors had once held Sonya captive and used her as part of a ceremony meant to test its young members. Along with fighting his cousin, Trey had then been expected to kill Sonya. He hadn't planned on going through with it, and those plans went awry anyway when a group of guardians disrupted the whole ceremony to bust Sonya out. Sidney had also caused a fair amount of chaos, and the warriors certainly weren't her fans.
"The warriors know Sidney's face," Eddie reminded us. "She can't do it. Send me. I wouldn't mind throwing a few of those freaks around. I've already had lots of practice."
"You have," agreed Marcus. "But Sidney's had a bit more practice with breaking and entering to retrieve intel, and they probably know your face, too."
Sidney frowned. "Can we both go? I wouldn't mind the backup, and I've got a few tricks that could disguise us."
"Are you going to sit by and let them go ahead with this?"
Aunt Tatiana asked me. I turned to Sidney in amazement.
"Are you seriously considering this? I mean, I'm all for crazy plans, but this is out there even for me."
Sabrina frowned and thought.
"The warriors usually just sponsor one person, but I've occasionally seen someone present two. If you could disguise yourselves, I could get you both in."
"Then send me and Sidney," I said.
"No way," said Eddie. "I'm in much better condition to beat those freaks up. No offense, Adrian."
I started to say I could protect her with spirit, but knew she wouldn't like that.
"You should stay behind, Adrian," agreed Sidney. "You could try to compel answers out of Alicia when the witches unfreeze her. No one but you can do that."
I opened my mouth to protest, but couldn't think of anything to say. Sidney had me cornered and knew it. I wanted to go with her, but not because I had a concrete plan for dealing with the warriors. I only had a gut instinct to protect her. But she was right about Alicia. We could give the witches their 2 days while Sidney went undercover with the warriors. Hopefully that would weaken whatever compulsion protection Alicia had put upon herself.
"You're endorsing me using spirit?" I asked in amazement.
"No," she admitted. "I'm hoping they can get answers out of her through other means. But if they can't, I have a feeling you'll use compulsion regardless."
"You're a wise woman, as usual," I told Sidney.
She smiled at that, but I could tell she wasn't happy with the idea at all. With a sigh, she turned back to Sabrina.
"How much trouble will you get in for this, for bringing two spies in? Because obviously we aren't really going to stay with the warriors."
Sidney had a point. What she and Eddie were volunteering for, infiltrating some barbaric initiation ritual, was dangerous, but we couldn't forget Sabrina's role in this. She was playing a game with a very volatile group, and could ultimately face more risk.
"Depends on if you guys get caught or not,"
Sabrina offered a tight smile that didn't reach her eyes.
"So don't get caught, okay?"
Trey looked grimmer and grimmer as the planning progressed.
"But this only happens if you can't convince the alchemists that the warriors are holding Jill. If you can convince them, they can hopefully do the heavy lifting so you don't have to get involved with any of this madness."
"Hopefully," agreed Marcus. "But in the meantime, we should prep Sidney and Eddie on what to expect if they do go with Sabrina."
Sabrina proceeded to give us a rundown on how she planned to sneak Sidney and Eddie in. The whole thing sounded awful the more she described it, and I again wanted to ask Sidney not to go. I realized me wanting to protect her from those dangers was akin to her asking me to hold back on spirit. Both were dangerous courses of action. Yet how could we not, when Jill's life was at risk?
"There's no good answer," declared Aunt Tatiana morosely, "and no good will come of any of this."
Lunch wound down with plans being finalized and Sidney intending to get some magical disguise help from her witch connections. Sabrina got a call summoning her back to the warriors earlier than she'd expected. She grimaced and stood up.
"I'll be in touch soon, when I get a few more details about the recruitment. Can one of you drop Marcus off at his safe house?"
"We'll do it," Sidney said, preempting Eddie and Trey. "We'll talk to you guys later." Our group dispersed, and Sidney and I led Marcus to the rental car we'd been driving since coming back to Palm Springs. It was a convertible, a bonus upgrade given to us by the company, even though we hadn't asked for it.
"Nice," said Marcus. "Great day to have the top down."
He glanced over at me.
Maybe not.
After yesterday's gray, Palm Springs was back to its sweltering summer conditions, ones I certainly didn't want to expose myself to. Sunlight didn't kill Maroy the way it did Strigoi, but it could certainly be uncomfortable for us if we were out in it long enough. Moments like this reminded me of the differences between Sydney and me. She loved the sun, and a life with me kept her from it.
You can put the top down if you want, I said casually, tossing Sydney the keys.
She gave me a weak smile, guessing my thoughts.
Nah, I'd rather have air conditioning.
I smiled back, knowing she was lying. Sometimes, lounging in bed, she and I would discuss plans for a future dream house. We decided we'd build a screened-in porch, airy enough for me to still enjoy the heat, but covered enough to block the worst of the light. I always teased her I'd serve her lemonade out there. It would be the perfect place for us, the meeting of worlds. But at the moment, it was hard to imagine a future like that. Marcus gave her directions to an apartment complex that actually wasn't that far from where I used to go to school at Carleton, on the other side of town. As she drove us onto the highway, I dialed someone that few Moroi were lucky enough to have in their phone's memory. I was even more surprised when she answered on the first ring.
"Hello, Adrian," said Lissa.
"Were you waiting by the phone for me?" I teased.
"I was waiting for Christian to call me, actually, but I'd rather hear from you, at least if you're calling to say you've got Jill."
"Afraid not," I said, feeling a pang at the loss. "But I've got some news that might be of use. We have good evidence that the Warriors of Light are holding Jill." Lissa clearly hadn't expected that.
"What? I thought it was some witch who hated Sydney. If the Warriors have her, then this isn't just about some vendetta anymore. Those people like to kill vampires for fun."
"It sounds like Alicia gave Jill to them for holding. Now Sydney has a convoluted plan to try to find out where Jill's being held, but if the alchemists could put some pressure on the Warriors instead, it'd save us a lot of trouble," I told her. "The only problem is, Sydney can't exactly call them up and ask."
"But I can," guessed Lissa.
"You're very charming and persuasive," I told her. "Plus, you've got a little bit more influence than we do."
"I'll see what I can do," she replied, sounding exhausted at the thought. I didn't blame her. Diplomacy would exhaust me, too, especially when dealing with assholes like the alchemists.
"They're going to want to know what good evidence we've got." I hesitated, thinking of Sabrina. "We can't exactly give our source up. Can you just tell them it's an anonymous tip and have them look into that?"
"I'll try," said Lissa, "but you know how they are."
"Yes," I agreed. "I certainly do. Good luck, and thanks."
"Nothing to thank me for. Jill's my sister."
I disconnected and was just in time to see Sydney drive right past the apartment complex Marcus had indicated.
"Hey," I said, recognizing it from my Carleton days. "You missed it."
Her expression had darkened. "I didn't miss the guys in suits snooping around the side of the building." Her eyes lifted to the rearview mirror, and she sighed.
"Or the black car that just peeled out of the building's lot and is now following us."
"Damn it," said Marcus. "They found out I came to town. I thought that place was secure."
I turned in my seat, craning my neck to see what Sydney had. Sure enough, a black Escalade was doing some pretty aggressive maneuvering to get into our lane. Sydney made an abrupt turn that caused me to grip the door, and the Escalade followed suit. The precious, fragile sense of freedom I'd allowed myself to enjoy since leaving court dissipated like smoke on the wind.
"Sorry, you guys," said Marcus. "They must have spotted me when I came in this morning."
Sydney made another surprise turn, one that the Escalade got honked at for copying. Her face was filled with tension, and I knew she had to be working hard to remain as calm as she looked. This was the nightmare she'd lived with for so long, the alchemists finding her again.
"Don't feel so bad," she told Marcus. "After everything that's gone down in Palm Springs, they probably keep eyes and ears here regularly. For all we know, you weren't even spotted. Someone could have seen Eddie and decided to do some snooping. He's a person of interest to them, too."
She shook her head.
"The real issue is how to lose them."
"Get back on the highway and take the first downtown exit," Marcus said.
"Going back into a congested area makes no sense," hissed Aunt Tatiana. "They'll take Sydney again."
"Shouldn't we get on the open highway and try to outrun them?" I asked.
"We'd never be able to do it," he said. "Besides, they'd probably get back up, and we'd find a few more of those coming after us."
Sydney exited as directed, pointing us toward the city center. Ahead of us, I could see some of the most crowded corridors of downtown, narrow streets packed with cars, while pedestrians and outdoor tables filled the sidewalks.
"I'm guessing you're playing on the fact that the alchemists don't like to make a scene," Sidney remarked. "But remember, they did chase us, quite openly, down the strip in Las Vegas."
She'd been in a wedding dress at the time, making us stand out that much more.
"They'll do what they've got to do."
Marcus nodded.
"I know, but they'll still avoid too much of a show if they can. Really, my main goal is getting to my escape car."
"Your escape car?" I stared, dumbfounded. "You have an escape car?" He flashed me a smile.
"I'm Marcus Finch. Of course I have an escape car. It's accessed by an underground tunnel that comes out of Miguel's taqueria."
"Underground?" Sidney shook her head. "Never mind. That's 6 blocks from here, and we're about to get stuck because of lights and slow cars."
The cars in front of us came to a stop as the traffic signal turned red.
"Correction," said Marcus, suddenly unbuckling his seatbelt. "They're about to get stuck because of lights and a stopped car. Everyone get out."
Immediately, I realized what was about to happen, and he confirmed it when he put his hand on the door's handle.
"You guys know how to be evasive. Meet me at Miguel's, but don't let them follow you there."
He was out of the car in a flash, and a couple of seconds later, so were we, once Sidney had shifted the car into park. He tore off down one side of the street, losing himself in the crowds of tourists and lunchgoers without looking back. Some might have considered it abandonment, but Marcus knew us well enough by now to trust we knew what to do in situations like this. Be unpredictable. Hide among crowds and businesses. Meet back up when we'd lost them. That was assuming, of course, that they even followed us. There'd been 2 cars between them and us on the road, so there was a chance they might not have seen us ditch our car. When the light turned green and traffic didn't move, they would figure out that something had gone wrong. The question was how far Sidney and I could get before then, and whether they'd follow Marcus or us. They followed us, of course.
"Faster," I said, clutching her hand as we tore off down the sidewalk.
A series of honks let me know when the light turned green, as angry drivers found themselves unable to get around our abandoned car. Shouts behind us were a tip-off that something else was awry, and when I glanced back, I saw a man and woman in beige suits barreling down the sidewalk toward us, oblivious to the pedestrians in their way. So much for not making a scene. Ahead of us, the sidewalk looked even more packed than usual as people clustered around something. Great. Not the slowdown we needed. Another quick look behind me showed the alchemist man, who was nearly as tall as me, gaining ground. I approached the crowd and saw they had stopped to admire displays of clothing that a shop had set out on the sidewalk as part of some sort of promotion. Dresses, gauzy scarves, and more created a brightly colored display that made even the most indifferent passerby stop and admire it. Sidney and I squeezed our way into a group of women admiring a purple silk dress and saw the alchemist's mere feet behind me. Sidney glanced around, and a smile unexpectedly crossed her lips. She spoke a magical incantation that was lost in the noise of the street, but the power it invoked had an immediate effect. All of that beautiful clothing around us exploded into rainbow-colored wisps of fabric. It rained down around us, making it nearly impossible to see. Chaos ensued as people cried out in wonder, unsure if it was an attack or some sort of publicity stunt.
"Come on,"
she said, picking up the pace again. As we ran away, I also heard an especially loud cry of dismay from someone I recognized, Leah DeStefano. This was her shop, which explained Sidney's sly smile. I felt a little bad, but also kind of not. Leah had made a gorgeous dress for Sidney once, a red gown inspired by ancient Greek styles. Sidney had been so beautiful in it, I'd thought I was dreaming. I had to give Leah credit for that. On the other hand, Leah had been so desperate to have Jill model for her that she'd covertly published an ad with Jill, the one that Alicia had included in the box Jackie had brought to Sidney. I didn't entirely know the relationship between Alicia, the Warriors, and how that ad had connected them to Jill, but there was no question that the ad had put Jill at risk. "Sorry, Leah," I muttered as I raced past her shop. "Next time, don't recruit models you aren't supposed to use." A block away was a florist's shop I'd been in once before. Without checking to see if we'd been followed, we quickly darted in through its door, which was propped open to enjoy the afternoon heat. Immediately, the overwhelming fragrance of roses and lilies surrounded us. Bouquets of every color filled the shop, but I looked past all of that for what I'd remembered seeing the last time I was here, a back door. The shop had two entrances, one that faced the main thoroughfare out front, and this second one that led to parking in the alley behind the businesses. I nodded and smiled at the surprised florist, then hurried Sydney through to the back door as though what we were doing was perfectly normal. In the alley, I paused and dared a peek through the door's window, waiting to see if an alchemist came bursting into the shop. No one did, so I crossed my fingers that destroying Leah's display had caused enough confusion to cover the rest of our journey. Sydney and I ran down the back alley, past the doors of more businesses, some of which were public and some weren't. When we reached the back door for Miguel's taqueria, it read, "Deliveries only." I knocked anyway, wondering how we would explain my presence to whoever answered. The guy who opened the door, however, didn't seem surprised at all to see us. He waved us inside. "You must be Marcus's friends." We entered and found ourselves in the entryway to the kitchen, which smelled delicious. A cook flipping a quesadilla glanced up, nodded like our presence was totally normal, and returned to his work. Meanwhile, our guide led us to a nearby storage room lined with shelves of food. There was a bona fide trap door in the floor. He opened it up, and down below, holding a flashlight, was Marcus. He waved up at us. "How do you know Marcus?" I asked as I started to climb the rungs down. My guide shrugged. "He did me a favor once." That seemed to be the story of Marcus's life. We thanked the guy and then made our way down. Just as Marcus had said, there really was a tunnel. We hurried through it with little conversation, emerging into a utility shed in a park a few blocks away. We saw no signs of pursuit in the tunnel or up above, and Marcus felt secure enough to lead us to a parked blue Chevy. He produced some keys from his pocket and unlocked the door. It wasn't until we were on the road that he finally spoke. "Well," he said, "I've got good news and bad news. The good news is that you don't have to keep making the alchemists think you're at court. The bad news is, the alchemists know you aren't there anymore." Chapter 14. Adrian. Again. Once I knew we were momentarily safe from the alchemists, the first thing I had to do was secure Declan and my mom. "Where are you?" I asked her when she answered the phone. I was sitting in the back seat while Marcus drove us to what he swore really was a safe house. Sydney was in the passenger seat, sending text updates to pretty much everyone we knew.
"I'm at Clarence's," replied my mother. "Where else would I be?"
I breathed a sigh of relief. "Good. You need to stay there for a while. Do not leave. Do you have enough supplies for Declan?" I thought she'd gone overboard in her initial shopping. Now I was grateful.
"Well, yes, I suppose, though he doesn't seem terribly fond of those pacifiers I bought. I might need to find a different..."
"Do not leave," I repeated. "The house is almost certainly being watched. The alchemists know we're here." Immediately my mother grasped the severity of the situation.
"Are you all right?"
"We're fine. We got away. But they'll watch all our hangouts now to see if we go there. They'll know we aren't back at Clarence's, and that's fine. But they also probably don't know you and Declan are there, and we need to keep it that way. Stay inside." She fell silent for several moments.
"Adrian, there's something unusual about Declan, isn't there?"
"Special," I corrected. "He's very, very special. And for now, it's best if the alchemists don't know he exists. If they want to chase after Sydney and me, fine. But he needs to stay off their radar."
"I understand," she said.
"If we need anything, I'll either have it shipped here or send Rose and Dimitri for it, assuming they can leave." I hesitated. "Yes. The alchemists have no interest in them. They might be curious about why they're in town, but they won't break into Clarence's house or anything to find out, not without some other provocation. Other Moroi and Dom Pierce have stayed with him before. Can I talk to one of them?" After some shuffling, Rose answered.
"I can tell by your mom's face that something went wrong."
"The alchemists know Sydney and I are here," I told her. "They managed to track Marcus when he came to town, and stumbled into us in the process." I couldn't be certain, but I think Rose swore in Russian.
"So what's the plan?"
"We are on our way to an allegedly safe place," I told her. "From there, Sydney's going to investigate the warriors, and I'll eventually interrogate Alicia."
"I want to be in on that," Rose said promptly.
"I know, but I really, really need you guys to stay with my mom and Declan. I was just telling her that she can't leave the house. I don't think the alchemists know she's in town, and I'm hoping it stays that way. But if something weird happens, I need you guys to protect them.
What do you mean something weird? Why would anyone care about them?
Rose, like my mom, was beginning to suspect something odd was happening.
I can't tell you, I said. Just trust me. It's important. At least one of you needs to stay with them at all times. If there's a way you can safely meet me when I talk to Alicia, we'll make it happen. But in the meantime, promise me you'll take care of them.
A long silence followed, and I could guess why. Rose, like everyone else, wanted to find Jill. With so many potential leads, it was understandable that she'd much rather be involved with that mission than literal babysitting. But Rose had seen enough at the commune, and was enough of my friend, to finally accede.
Okay, we'll keep an eye on them. But if there's anything we can do to find Jill, anything at all,
I'll let you know, I promised. I disconnected and looked around.
Is this it?
We'd left the urban sprawl of Palm Springs, going off into the desert to a place that made Wolf's compound look downright civilized. A small, lone cabin sat alone on a scrubby landscape, and the car's tires kicked up clouds of dust as we turned toward it on a sandy dirt road.
Yep,
said Marcus.
Well, it's certainly remote, noted Sydney. But is it safe?
Safe as we'll get for now,
Marcus assured us, pulling the car up to a stop outside the house.
No one followed us here. No one knows of my connection to these people.
We got out of the car and followed Marcus to the door. He had to knock three times, getting progressively louder, before the door finally opened. A 50-something guy with scraggly hair and round-lensed glasses peered up at us, squinting at the sunlight like a Maroi might have. His face brightened with recognition.
Marcus, man, been a while. Good to see you too, Howie, Marcus replied. My friends and I need a place to stay. Is it okay if we crash here?
Totally, totally.
Howie stepped aside so we could enter.
Come on in, man.
Howie and his wife Patty grow and sell all sorts of herbs, explained Marcus.
I inhaled deeply as I walked around the living room, which could have come straight out of 1971.
Especially one herb in particular, I added.
Don't worry, said Marcus, his lips quirking into a smile. They're good people.
Sydney wrinkled her nose.
Not going to do us any good to evade the alchemists if we then get arrested in a drug raid.
Marcus was unconcerned.
That's the least of our worries. They'll give us a place to stay, and their kitchen's always well stocked.
That was true, at least. So long as we could survive on junk food, we'd be in no danger of going hungry any time soon. I'd never seen so many boxes of Twinkies in my life. Patty was as dazedly friendly as her husband, assuring us we could make ourselves at home and stay as long as we liked. The two of them probably spent most of their time in the basement or in the garden outside, growing the various plants they then consumed or sold. Once we were settled, they disappeared downstairs, leaving us to make plans. I learned then that while I'd talked to Rose and my mom, Marcus and Sydney had been gathering other info.
Sabrina got back to Marcus. She's going to take Eddie and me to the Warriors late tonight, Sydney said.
Very late. We apparently have to arrive at dawn. Ms. Terwilliger's going to come out beforehand with Eddie to help with some spells and prepare us.
I hope it goes without saying that Eddie will be careful in coming here, said Marcus. By now, the alchemists probably have eyes on everyone you know in the area.
He'll be careful, she said confidently. He knows how to avoid being followed.
She turned back to me.
Ms. Terwilliger will then take you with her for when the witches unfreeze Alicia. Promise me you'll be careful, Adrian. Go easy on her. Only use as little compulsion as necessary. Remember, the odds are good she may not even know where the alchemists are holding Jill.
Go easy on her? Even though I knew Sydney had meant that as a way of looking out for me, it was impossible to imagine. How could I go easy on the woman who'd kidnapped Jill, who was the reason Jill might very well be suffering at the hands of those madmen? Sonia had been in bad shape when she'd been rescued from the Warriors, and they'd had Jill much, much longer.
Alicia will pay, Aunt Tatiana promised in my head.
To Sydney, I said, I'll see what I can do. My phone rang, and I felt a dry sort of amusement at the display.
Not many people can claim to talk to the Moroi Queen twice in one day. Hello?
Adrian?
Came Lys's voice.
What have you done?
Why do you assume I've done anything? I asked. Lys sighed.
Because an angry alchemist bureaucrat just called pretty worked up about how you and Sydney are at large in Palm Springs. They made it very clear they aren't going to pull any punches in trying to get her back. I thought you guys were lying low.
We were, I said. It was kind of an accident, but we're safe for the time being.
Well, try to stay that way. On the bright side, I was able to get through to someone to ask about the alchemists possibly putting pressure on the warriors.
Hope filled me. It would save Sydney from infiltrating the warriors, and me from interrogating Alicia, if the alchemists could just rescue Jill for us.
And?
I asked.
It's what I feared. They want more proof. I mean, the person I talked to made some vague comments about making inquiries, but I didn't really feel like he was taking me seriously. I think he thinks I was using it to deflect from you and Sydney being outside of court.
My hopes fell as I looked at Sydney across the room. She was trying to sit in an overstuffed beanbag chair. The thought of her going off to sneak around the warrior's compound made me ill. It had been one thing when she'd left with Eddie and Mr. Williger, but now she was walking right into the hands of some of her enemies. What if she was found out? What if the warriors tried to renew their friendship with the alchemists by using her as a bargaining chip? What if the warriors decided to make an example of the woman who'd married a vampire?
No good can come of any of this, Aunt Tatiana reiterated. I'll keep working on them, though, Lyssa continued, oblivious to my churning thoughts. And I assume you guys are doing your own things to get answers?
So it seems, I said.
Well, let me know if I can offer any help. I talked to Rose earlier, and it sounds like you've already got her working on something. Feel free to use her and Dimitri and Neil however you can if it'll help get Jill back.
Lyssa's tone sounded perfectly innocent, and I realized Rose must have kept the news of Declan's secret even from her best friend. It made me grateful, but also drove home the precariousness of Declan's situation. Lyssa's mention of Neil also reminded me that we still hadn't yet had a chance to sit him down and explain what's going on. Too many complications just kept coming up. The rest of the day was spent waiting for Jackie and Eddie to come by. Marcus, who'd spent so much of his life on the run, seemed perfectly at ease cooped up in the cabin's small living room. Sydney and I, who'd grown used to our freedom, short as it was, had a harder time. We made all the plans we could with our friends remotely, and then mostly tried to pass the time. Despite the private location, we were hesitant to go outside. The house's one TV was in the basement, and the second-hand smoke coming out of there was strong enough to keep us away. That left a stack of old Reader's Digests as our remaining entertainment.
"There's a car pulling up," said Marcus later that evening.
He'd been standing near the window, occasionally looking out the drawn curtains. A frown crossed his face.
"I don't see Jackie or Eddie."
Sydney leapt up and joined him at the window. After a few moments, her tension faded.
"It's okay. I know them."
Marcus opened the door, and two women I recognized entered. One was Maud, the senior member of Sydney's coven, who'd helped at the lake. The other was feisty old Inez, giving me a wink as she stepped across the threshold. Maud lingered at the door, keeping it open as though she expected someone else to come through. No one did, and after several seconds she nodded for Marcus to close it. I knew enough from Sydney to realize someone invisible had entered, and as that realization hit me, the spell surrounding that person broke.
"Eddie!"
Sydney exclaimed, running to give him a hug. He grinned back.
"You guys okay?"
"Fine," I said. "Just stocking up on carbs and waiting for the next phase of craziness to start."
"You sure no one followed you?"
asked Marcus, tugging the curtains around the front windows closer together.
"Positive," said Eddie. "We met up in a public place, and the alchemist sent to watch me never even knew I left with these two."
Inez was sizing up our surroundings with a critical eye and didn't look impressed.
"Jacqueline sent us since she couldn't get away from your friends. They've staked out her house."
"The alchemists aren't my friends," Sydney retorted.
"Well, whatever they are, they're a pain in the ass," Inez said. "But we told her we'd help you, so here we are."
"Thank you, ma'am," Sydney said, adorably polite as ever. "I know what an inconvenience it must be." Maud smiled kindly at her.
It's not as inconvenient as some people would have you think.
She set down two large tote bags, stuffed to overflowing with mysterious ingredients.
Now then, I understand we need to make you stronger.
Do you? Sydney asked in surprise. Inez pushed up the sleeves of her rose-printed dress and peered into one of the bags.
That's what Jacqueline says. Says you're going to be getting in fights or some such nonsense.
Well, yeah, but I just figured I'd use the evasive techniques Wolf taught me.
Wolf?
Inez snorted in disgust.
That hippie that Jacqueline's dating? Believe me, smarts and evasive techniques are fine if that's all you've got to rely on. But if you get a chance to be the baddest and strongest, always be the baddest and strongest.
There were a number of things wrong with what she'd said, starting with her referring to Wolf, who owned more weapons than anyone I'd ever met, as a hippie. Inez carefully took out an innocuous-looking canteen from the bag.
What's that? I asked.
A very special and complex potion, said Maud. One that several of us worked on for most of today.
As she spoke, I took note of the dark circles under her eyes and fatigue in her voice. Sydney saw it too.
You didn't have to do that, she said.
We did,
said Maud simply. Cleaning up after Alicia is our responsibility, and if that involves preparing you for these bizarre acts of brutality, we'll help you do it.
What's in it? I asked. The scope and randomness of human magic was still kind of amazing to me. Plus, focusing on it distracted me from thinking about Sydney and bizarre acts of brutality.
You're happier not knowing, Maud told me. Now then, we need to finish off the spell by...
We heard the sound of a door opening. A moment later, the beaded curtain separating the living room from the kitchen rustled, and Howie stepped through. He looked surprised to see additional people here and blinked a few times, as though ascertaining that we were all real and not some hallucination. I imagined in his life that was a distinction that had to constantly be made. And, considering my increasing interactions with Aunt Tatiana, it was something I could relate to.
"Hey, man, Marcus," he said, pushing up his glasses.
"Didn't know you had more people over, man. We're looking for the Doritos. Have you seen the Doritos?"
Marcus pointed to an end table by the couch. Howie brightened as he lifted the Doritos bag, then turned dismayed when he saw it was nearly empty.
"You were up here eating them around lunchtime," Marcus reminded him.
Howie looked pleasantly skeptical.
"I was?"
"Yeah," I confirmed. "You said you were watching some mutant shark movie that was on commercial."
"Trey was watching that earlier today, too,"
remarked Eddie in a too casual way that made me think Trey hadn't been the only one watching it.
"Was it a double feature with Raptorbot Rampage?" Sydney asked dryly.
Howie held up a warning finger.
"That stuff's not made up, you know. Real life is stranger than fiction, man. The government's hiding it from us."
"Totally,"
said Marcus, steering Howie back toward the beaded curtain.
"Why don't you take some cookies back down in the basement instead? I think I saw some Nutter Butters in the kitchen."
Marcus got our host situated and then sent him on his way. None of the rest of us spoke until we heard the basement door close again. Eddie remarked,
"Real life is stranger than fiction."
"Tell me about it," Sydney said, turning back to the canteen. "What do I have to do?"
"Drink it," said Inez. "We mixed in some tang to help it taste better. Emphasis on help."
"But first, we finish the spell," said Maud.
She and Inez linked hands, forming a circle around where the canteen sat on the table. I'd heard Sydney recite spells enough to recognize the sound of Latin. I'd also learned enough to know that most of the spells she used were simple ones, with immediate results. The kind these witches were dealing with now, spells with multiple parts that required multiple magic users, were heady, and Sydney's odd expression reflected as much. When they finished the chant, Maud handed the canteen over to Sydney with a flourish.
"Bottoms up," said Maud.
Sydney unscrewed the lid and grimaced at what she saw inside. I was standing near her and shared her disgust. The concoction smelled like wet rope and tang.
"The faster you drink it, the better," added Inez. "Plugging your nose wouldn't hurt either."
Sydney did both, but none of it stopped her from gagging.
It better not come back up, warned Inez, because we don't have any more of it.
Sydney winced and shook her head as she handed the canteen back. It's staying down. What now? Am I really stronger? Mostly I just feel like I want to brush my teeth. She certainly hadn't sprouted giant muscles nor begun compulsively pumping iron.
And how much stronger? Asked Eddie eagerly. Like, lift up a car stronger?
Maud smiled.
Sorry to disappoint, but no. For one thing, that would attract too much attention, and you probably don't want that. For another, our power has limitations. We can't go around creating gods. I'd say...
She glanced between Eddie and Sydney speculatively, her smile growing.
I'd say you're strong enough to hold your own with a Dampier in an arm wrestling match.
I would kind of love to see that, I admitted.
Eddie's face said he would as well.
Sydney groaned. Really? That's so barbaric.
Eddie leaned over and propped his arm up on the table that had previously held the canteen.
Come on, Mrs. Ivashkov, let's do this. Besides, if you're squeamish about arm wrestling, how are you going to handle going head-to-head with the Warriors?
He had a point, at least based on the stories Sabrina had told us. Sydney stood opposite him at the table and mirrored his arm position. Their arms clasped, and Marcus counted them down, looking nearly as excited as Eddie. To my astonishment, when they started, Eddie didn't immediately slam her hand down as I'd expected. His eyes widened, as did his grin. He increased his effort and began making progress. Gritting her teeth, Sydney pushed back, and amazingly, she soon took the upper hand, so to speak.
It's so strange, she said. I can feel the strength within me, as though it's both part of me and yet not part of me. Like it was something I put on, like clothing.
Ultimately, Eddie pushed his strength to its limit and finally defeated her, but not without her holding her own for a while. I held up her arm triumphantly, like a victor at a boxing match.
My wife, ladies and gentlemen, beauty, brains, and now brawn.
Awesome, said Eddie, in a rare moment of delight.
How long will that last?
4 days, said Maud, looking apologetic. Like I said, we can't create gods.
4 days, Sydney repeated. Sabrina's taking us later tonight, so we've got 3.5 days to find out what the Warriors are hiding about Jill.
Or just kick everyone's ass the first day so they leave you alone after that,
suggested Marcus helpfully. Noting the second tote bag the witches had brought, I asked, what else is there besides super strength? Maud began unpacking the bag's contents.
Jackie says we need to do some appearance changes, too.
I've done those kinds of spells before, Sydney told them. You don't need to do anything more.
Hush, girl, snapped Inez. You need to conserve your strength for whatever madness you're getting involved in. Besides, maintaining a sustained spell of change is no easy task. You ever done it for a week?
She glanced at Eddie.
For 2 people?
No, ma'am, Sydney admitted.
Maud tossed Sydney 2 boxes of hair dye in burnished chestnut.
One for each of you, she said. You can do it after we leave. The less we have to change with magic, the better.
Eddie took one of the boxes and raised an eyebrow. He made no complaint, however. Some guys would have thrown a fit about having to dye their hair, but not Eddie. I suppose when you vanquished evil undead creatures as part of your normal life, a little salon treatment in no way threatened your masculinity. The rest of the bag contained what I recognized as standard spell components. Herbs, crystals, powders. Maud and Inez began building a spell circle on the table, and I realized I was watching another complicated act of magic that had required multiple people and parts. Sydney realized it, too.
So much, she murmured to me. They're helping so much.
Take it, I replied, squeezing her hand. You're worth it. Jill's worth it. When their materials were ready, Inez set 2 silver rings in the middle of it all. She glanced at Maud.
Are you ready?
Maud nodded and walked over to Sydney, wielding a wand. Reluctantly, I stepped away from her, remarking,
How come you never wave a wand?
Sydney smiled back.
Despite the clichés, witches rarely use wands. They are necessary for detailed work or if part of the wand contains an element that can focus or amplify the magic.
She eyed the crystals on the wand Maud held up to her face.
I'm guessing focus here.
Correct, said Maud. Now hold still and close your eyes.
She recited a Greek verse, and a faint glow lit the wand. A moment later, she touched the tip of Sidney's nose with it. Slowly, carefully, Maud moved the wand around, going on to Sidney's eyelids, then her cheekbones and chin. Each place the wand touched, it was like Maud was airbrushing a picture, changing each of Sidney's features. Her cheekbones rounded a little, her face grew narrower. They were small, subtle changes, but taken altogether, the results wholly altered her. Even with her normal hair color, I doubted anyone would have recognized her. Soon, even Sidney's tattoo disappeared. The biggest shock of all was when Maud stepped back and told Sidney to open her eyes. What had once been brown were now as vivid a blue as Marcus's. I couldn't help a gasp, and Sidney turned to me with a sheepish smile. Still recognize me? I'd know you anywhere, I said gallantly.
I wouldn't, said Eddie.
Immediately Maud directed her attention to him.
Your turn. Close your eyes.
He did, and she repeated the spell. I watched in wonder as his face changed appearance every place the wand passed. When she was finished, he no longer looked like the Eddie I knew, but he certainly looked like he could be related to the new Sidney.
Can I see? Asked Eddie excitedly.
Wait, said Inez, taking the wand from Maud. We have to act quickly to save the spell.
She waved the wand over the rings and chanted in Greek again. Sparks jumped between the wand and the rings. When she finished, she gave one ring to Eddie and one to Sidney. They slipped them on, and Sidney's breath caught.
Strange, she murmured. I feel like something just locked into place. Those rings bind the spells to you now, said Maud. Take them off, and your original appearances will return. Otherwise, they should last for about a week.
That's your real deadline, added Inez. You can probably hide when your strength's gone, but when your face comes back, the jig is up. Then you really will have to rely on your smarts to explain that away.
Her voice was as sarcastic and crotchety as always, but underneath, I could tell she was worn out. A quick aura check proved as much. The magic they'd just performed here had been substantial, and it was only a part of what had been started earlier today with the help of other witches. Sidney turned to Maud and Inez.
I can't thank you enough for what you've done. Really, this means so much to me, and—
No need to gush, interrupted Inez. We know you're grateful, and you should be, but now you need to prove it and go clean up Alicia's mess. Save your friend.
Sidney straightened up.
I will, ma'am.
The witches gave a few more last-minute instructions, both for Sidney and for me, since I'd be joining them later to release Alicia, and then went on their way. Eddie and Sidney made a beeline for a mirror and exclaimed in amazement at their change in appearance. They had previously been mistaken for siblings, and now they just looked like a different set of siblings. They had the same blue eyes, and Maud had done a neat job of making them look pleasantly average. Hopefully, it would ensure no one gave them a second glance. I just finished helping them dye their hair burnished chestnut, a shade that was dark brown with a faint red cast, when Sabrina showed up. Her normally cocky persona faltered a bit as she took them in. She'd grown used to a number of weird realities, but human magic wasn't something she'd had a lot of experience with.
Incredible, she murmured, looking back and forth between their faces. I'd never think it was you. You could walk right past the alchemists now.
Marcus, watching with amusement, crossed his arms and leaned back into Howie's overstuffed sofa.
Maybe your friends can hook me up with that spell once in a while. Going incognito would be pretty handy.
I'll let them know, Sidney said. To Sabrina, she held up the hand wearing the silver ring.
Are there any rules about jewelry? Will they let us wear these in?
They should, she said. They'll search for weapons or anything else they think is suspicious. Cell phones, too. They don't want any way for people to track you. You'll go blindfolded when I take you in.
Sounds a lot like when I went to their arena, Sidney remarked. She took off her engagement and wedding rings and walked over to me.
I don't want anything to happen to these while I'm there.
I clasped both of her hands in mine. It's not the rings I'm worried about. A faint smile crossed her lips, and even though the face was different, there was a feel to that smile that was uniquely Sidney.
I'll be fine. But I want you to hold on to these for me until I get back.
Deal, I said, in a low voice that only she could hear. But I get to put them back on you.